Hi, Gomathi.
Hey, Richie.
I just texted Paul, so we should. And I'm going to shoot him an email as well, just in case.
Okay.
I apologize for this, but I guess it is helpful to have the playback, and I thought this was on our line, and so this is my fault.
No worries. We're adaptable. It's all about resilience.
A lot of flexibility.
We can adapt to changing conditions. Paul's on. He's on the road. You're on. Jenna's not going to be on. And then will Sybil from your organization join as well? Okay.
No, just me.
Okay. So I think we might be a team of three today. Maybe
it sounds like it. Okay. I think that is correct. Hi,
Great. Paul's rejoining. Mm-hmm.
Paul, thank you very much. And I apologize for the last minute switch here, but you have Gomathi Sandhasivan from DNVGL and myself on here. It's just going to be the three of us today, and I appreciate, we were just saying, you know, it's all about flexibility and resiliency, and this I appreciate the little switch of a play call here to get on the line.
No problem at all, and I've got as much time as you need. If we need to go beyond 45, I can do that. If there's something that comes up as a question later, I'd be happy to answer it later and in a timely way, because I know you're trying to wrap up all these interviews. So glad to help out any way I can.
Well, perfect. Why don't I just start real quick? And I know that we've talked a lot about GMI recently. And so, Gomathi, just so you're aware, Paul has certainly been close to the GMI product in years past, and we've talked a bunch this fall about even expanding its scope in different ways. So, you know, I've been giving background on GMI. I'm not going to do that so much here. But Paul, just so you're aware, and what we're doing here in this 2019 version is a little different than what we've been talking about. And just so we're all on the same page, of the real purpose of this call is we really want to be able to tell those stories of what's happening on the grid, and we want to be able to highlight your messages and AEP's messages, likewise all of our members, in the right way to really explain how the pace of change or how transitions in this electric system are happening, you know, on the grid, and where are some of the challenges and what are some of the hurdles that's really not being told by data. And so we're talking to all of our utilities, and we've had, I think, six or seven already, and we've got a few more lined up here, Paul. To get into some of these different programs that they're doing that they're very proud of and that are making a difference. And so we just talked to Duke Energy. We talked specifically about their grid improvement plan and, you know, what have they learned in 2019 since, you know, the filing started in 2018? You know, what are they most proud of? And so, you know, from them, from their point of view, just to kind of start off of what we've learned just today, you know, just the changing atmosphere and the changing environment and the kind of ecosystem of the stakeholders, it's very eye-opening to them in North Carolina of how many different stakeholders are interested in the grid and improvements and how different all of their needs and priorities are. And so one of the best things that's coming out of this new grid improvement plan that they did is all those stakeholders are talking to each other. So, you know, not only are they talking to the utility, but, and that's a totally new thing, but they're learning from each other as well. So it's this kind of new era of transparency, and that's really something that they're most proud of. Even if they're kind of getting, you know, slammed sometimes, it's still, they realize that, you know, the process is the win, and that, you know, the grid and customers are really going to benefit in the end, even if there's some growing pains. So with that said, DNVGL and Gomathi and her team are helping us craft some of these messages around, you know, there's trends happening. We're focusing on three trends this year. Those trends are preparing for electrification of transportation, enabling a resilient grid, and kind of this, like, integrating all these renewables. And we're calling it kind of the energy transformation. But those are the three big trends, and they're being pushed by different factors, right? You know, markets or consumers or utilities. But in this case, we really want to talk about you and, you know, how you're changing kind of the innovation side of things and how AEP is starting to modify their approach to innovation and how, you know, you're working with different stakeholders and what you're finding is some of the, you know, successes and the challenges. And so, you know, we can spend 20 or 30 minutes here, and this is hopefully the most I'll talk, and I'd much rather hear you talk, Paul. But, you know, just off the bat, you know, at the start, are there any questions before I hand this over to Gomathi to kind of go through these questions that I circulated? Any questions you have about the purpose of this or the purpose of GMI 2019 to get started?
You know, if I could just sort of summarize what you were saying, Richie, you know, there's you know, the quantitative side, but then I think you want to enrich what the index is going to show and where states are with some color. And these stories that, you know, Duke is talking through and I'll be sharing in a minute, are very useful, I think, to GridWise members to explain why and how and what is behind the numbers. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. We're actually not collecting new data for this year's, and we'll be using that next year. But
right.
Really, we're telling it's more of an anecdotal story of, you know, yeah, exactly that. What can we learn from what you're going through on the demo project side? And, you know, can we help you in your jurisdictions, and can we help, you know, our members in their jurisdictions with some insights? So that's the purpose of GMI this year.
Great.
And you hit it head on.
Okay. So first off, I mean, I would explain that, you know, we are innovating a innovation process that we only started in 2017. If y'all had a chance to look at the two-minute video, you saw the first slide with Nick's statement about you know, the distribution grid of the future can really do wonders if we can just find the right technologies, right? And so we're looking at non-wires alternatives to traditional solutions. Frankly, in the same three sweet spots that you all have identified in these trends, you see later, you know, EVs, resiliency, which we are looking for storage and microgrid capabilities, for instance, that are not procurement ready today, but are going to be widely deployable once we prove out these technologies in 2 to 5 years. We have people inside AEP that, you know, are looking right now at, you know, what's the better EV charger, charge point or EVgo or whatever that you can buy off the rack today. That's not what Nick Akins has asked Ram Sastry and me and the innovation technology team to do. Okay, but in those three areas where we're looking for these new technologies, we're very focused on the idea that startups can quite helpful to us. These are not idea stage, but rather pilot ready. And as you saw from Ram's video and the first slide in the deck that I sent, we've gone totally different than we were doing in the past, where we, you know, hired General Electric and say, could you come up with a solution for us? We got invited to Free Electrons in 2018. This is a year after Ram got the homework from Nick to start a new group. And in the spring of 2018, we joined Free Electrons. Do y'all know much about that accelerator?
Paul, this is Gomathi. I wanted to say I went through the video that you passed on and the deck. And, yeah, please do expand on Free Electrons. Is it like an incubator for energy-adjacent tech startups?
Well, it's not at the incubator stage. It's more of a business development accelerator if there's a technology that is pilot ready, okay? There are different maturities of technologies that different accelerators and incubators nurture, right? There's a number of these out there, but the ones that we're in two, as you can see from the first slide, Free Electrons basically gets about 500 applicants or more a year from about 60 countries around the world through a filtering process as they are looking at energy and our focus areas and our time horizons. There's 10 international utilities, and through a process, we filter those 500 down to about 30. They go to boot camp, and people want to get into this program because their expenses, traveling to different places, and being coached in order to be sitting in front of corporates like AEP is all paid for. So at the end, they understand how to make a pitch, explain in better detail than when they first entered the program, what the benefits are of their technology to the electric utilities. At the end of the day, the companies, the utilities that are in there, are there really to pilot them, to validate their technologies. And if their benefits are shown, the products or services they have then can be purchased, or perhaps an investment could be made in the company if it's thought of to be investment grade. So the accelerator is a super efficient way for us to get lots of these startups in front of us. We used to be very risk adverse in talking at any company that, you know, wasn't capitalized at, under 100 million. Okay. And here we are talking with startups that, you know, probably have $1 million and that's it. You know, there's one person or three people and $3. But that doesn't matter to us because if we can quickly validate their technologies, we'll find a way then to widely deploy them. And so Free Electrons is one. It's been around for a while, and there's a website that you can go to, and you'll see our name up there. You'll see some of examples of the startups from the 3 years that it has been in existence. So there's plenty of material there just to get a sense. We joined a second one called Starter. This one has a little bit different approach, but basically it puts another 500 startups in the applicant pipeline, and we sort those out in a very similar way. Why are we doing this? Well, if you have a CEO like Nick Akins who says, I'm real interested in how new technologies can help my operations get better, but I'm also extremely focused on giving a customer whatever they want. And so we feel like the traditional ways of doing that are too slow, maybe end up too costly, maybe aren't quite right. And so when we came up with this new approach that we outlined in the deck and in the video, we went from 3 startups last year to 10 this year. We're piloting them. And what we determined is that when you are willing to collaborate almost with a startup to get to the diamond in the rough, and you go through together the testing, you get results that are typically positive and successful. If you look at most startups, the success rate for them is pretty low to survive because they never find the right partner, either from investment or, you know, from just paying attention to them. They run out of cash or whatever. But in our case, we think we've turned that math upside down so that for a lot of the pilots we are now finishing, since we started up with the 10 in the spring, we're finding some pretty interesting benefits. Let me give you a couple of examples that may be useful for you. But before I do that, is this the kind of information that y'all are looking for?
Yes, that's good. And I was just going to ask, and I think you were about to get into that. You know, the three trends that we spoke about, I was going to say the pilots that you're now finishing, if you could expand on the areas that these three pilots, whether it's electrification of transportation or resilience, any of these tech demos, how they intersect with these trends, you know, some reasons behind why you chose that specific project, you know, any of if
sure.
any of those intersect with resilience and grid improvement. So yeah, please keep going,
yeah.
and then we can double back if you didn't cover anything.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
going
fine.
Great.
So you know, if you took a look, there's a slide in the deck that talks about our focus areas and our time horizons. Okay. And there's many companies that are looking for now kind of technologies that, you know, can be deployed right away. We have people looking at that, and we consider that to be a procurement, you know, kind of exercise. Nothing wrong with that, but Nick Akins wants us to focus a little bit more into the future. And so the three areas, our focus areas for those technologies happen to be the same as you're looking at these trends. Okay, so what do we need to do in the distribution grid space to help support and grow EV electrification? You know, the grid, obviously, we all know this wasn't designed for it. However, I'll give you an example of a couple of technologies that fit into that space. So, one of them, and I'm not going to give you any names because we're not quite finished. One of them from England can actually link up with traditional charging chargers in residential settings, and can shift charging to whatever time the grid needs additional capacity or to remove stresses or whatever, simply based on a signal from the distribution operator. So the traditional thinking is, you know, just time of day rates, you get people to sign up, and, you know, they'll be off peak, right? What we found with this software provider is that we can much more precisely manage the grid according to dynamic factors anytime we want, and the car will be charged up by the time the user needs it. Now, when you couple that technology on the residential side with a grid balancing a software platform on the commercial side, which we've also piloted successfully. We found these guys actually in California where they can optimize for building loads, EV charging, solar generation, and storage all on the same platform. And this was inspired by the huge penalties in California for going over, you know, certain demand levels as a way of managing the grid much better. So we've shown on the commercial side a non-wire solution for handling expected new applications on the grid. And on the residential side, we have. So when you couple those two together, we actually see other synergies that we didn't see before. So when we pilot these together, and then we add a third one, which is a software platform that can look into the economics of transforming gas-powered fleets to electric. We found these guys, and they we tested them in our fleet in just Ohio, and they showed that we've got doing this so that if our operating companies, you know, want to do the conversions pretty quickly, we.
Paul, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You're fading in and out. Richie, I don't know if it's the same at your end.
Yeah.
But I got, we add a software platform that can also look into the economics of electrification. And then after that, it started to get a little choppy. I don't know if you're going through an area of coverage.
I'm going, I'm in southern Ohio right now, so. If you can't hear me, just yell at me, okay? Because it's sometimes a cell phone. So what I'm trying to explain and is not only that we're piloting these, right, with a lot of anonymized data internally, but we are looking to figure out how we can deploy these either internally or for our customers like school bus fleets, offering the FedEx and others, because this tool was not available before. So the synergies is there. For grid, this is your last trend, right? We have found a technology that can actually take smart meter data and make predictions on failures and other dynamic factors on circuits. We tested these guys out in Texas, and their technology was pretty good, but our guys in Texas saw that sometimes they were under-predicting, you know, what was actually happening there on the grid. And it wasn't because the software wasn't good. It was that our data from the smart meters wasn't high enough quality. And so the guys talked about that, and they actually wrote up a software addition to their platform to improve the predictability when you have bad data or lower quality data. And that's been something we've been looking for years. These guys in this small company did it in about a week. So you get very high speed from these startups. They're dedicated. They're very smart. And so the next step in that project is to go from 20,000 to 100,000 meters to make sure that they can handle the data. And then we'll start to deploy that, not just in Texas, but anywhere in the AP system that, you know, we need to. The resiliency area is kind of interesting as well, where we have a number of different combinations of hardware and software going on. Everybody talks about the importance of microgrids, especially if you're in California and you're getting, you know, basically your power shut off by PG&E. Hopefully that'll never happen, but the point is that when you take a look at the intensity of weather events, tornadoes are, you know, are more intense, you have more of them, you know, flooding, whatever, these are uncontrollable things from a utility standpoint, And so when a customer says, I never, never, never want to be out, well, then a microgrid or series of microgrids could be a very good solution instead of stringing more wire, putting up transformers and the like. So we're anticipating that we'll be doing more than one microgrid on a circuit or a feeder, for instance. We were looking around to see if there was any kind of orchestration of multiple microgrids that would take a signal from the circuit to perform in different ways. So, for instance, if the circuit needs more power and it's at night, then the storage would kick in. And so we're actually testing that down in Louisiana right now to see, if it actually works. Let me just stop there for a second and see what kinds of questions you have.
So, we got some really rich, you covered like the electrification, the resilience. I wanted to ask, were there any challenges or opportunities that you identified as you were going through looking at these specific resilience projects or the electrification projects? Because we did touch on all three trends. Any of these projects that you chose, did you encounter any challenges or opportunities? If you want to talk about that, that would be great.
Yeah. So, first off, as I mentioned, Nick Akins wants more pilots. He wants faster results. So we had to come up with, something different than the traditional way of, maybe going to conferences and finding a startup or maybe going to a university and contracting and that sort of thing. That's why we came up with the six questions. We found that startups typically don't really have a good idea what our challenge is and what solutions they can provide to us. So those six questions we developed so that there's focus right away on the scope of work. The most important of those six questions is number three. What's the minimum fastest to complete activities that would demonstrate the benefits? This has really, really been actually a help as the startups have fed back to us that they say, now we know, how to write something up to you guys, because otherwise we'd just be writing you a book. So it really narrows down the scope to a matter of months instead of years. The cost is not, 6, 7 zeros. It's usually 5, and we can get them done very quickly. So one challenge was just be able to communicate with each other on this stuff. Another, frankly, is more cultural internally, and that is that we have a lot of people that hear the words out of our CEO in the vision, but they have no real way of translating that into practical terms. And so we've deliberately included either an operating company team, say like this one out of AP Texas, the vice president distribution was delegated by our president there to work with us on this predictive software approach, right? The guys, for this orchestration microgrid thing, were a combination of generating staff and distribution line staff, and they're happy to participate because they get a better idea of what Nick Akins means when he says, "I want you to innovate," and so they're very, very pleased to participate, especially if we get positive results, along those lines. The one area, and this is the one, a great segue, I think, is that we really need to have our state legislators and our state regulators, our economic regulators, understand the speed at which we're now able to move and find these startup solutions that have deployment capability, and have them help us approve these investments in these so that we can bring them to all of our customers much faster. Nick talks a lot about, we need the help of the regulators and the legislators. And I'd like to think that now that we have concrete results from about 10, we can show the benefits and we can work with these policymakers to craft new ways to evaluate these in a fast way and then move forward. One small step in the right direction has come out of a plug load management technology that we showed work in our service centers in Indiana. In most jurisdictions, the commissions have set up a third-party verifier on any kind of new technology. And in the case of this plug load management, where there's a sophisticated software that intervenes and turns off and throttles back different appliances, we did this in parallel with the third-party verifier. And the idea here is that if the vendor showed certain results, would the third-party verifier do the same? And if that happens, then Indiana, Michigan can go straight away to the commission and say, hey, third-party verifier, check this out, and it works. So please, approve, X amount of money so we can get these in the hands of our commercial customers, our residentials. The energy savings were projected to be between 20 and 40% by this technology, and I think our number came in at around 34. So it's significant, and it could be very, very helpful, for anyone that's interested in more energy efficiency than they could get currently. Does that help?
Yes, I had a clarifying question. So this is a DERMS that you're talking about, like this plug load management technology?
Well, in visualize this, it looks somewhat like the actual piece of hardware. It looks somewhat like your plug adapter for your iPad or iPhone. Right? It's very small. And then the local Wi-Fi system that is set up with the software package can actually control all the loads that are running into all those plugs. So you would, put a lot of plugs throughout a commercial establishment, refrigerators and that sort of thing, and the software intervenes you can't otherwise see it.
Uh-huh. Okay, got it. So it's like a smart plug. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And in terms of that you use to track these various different pilots, you did note that question three is significant, like how quickly can the project demonstrate benefits. But for some of the projects that you talked about, can you elaborate a little bit on what you use to define success for those projects?
Sure. Everybody talks about KPIs and what is success or what not. So these are actually goals that are laid out during the scoping, and we all agree on what those need to be. So that's one reason why my business units or my operating companies are involved from the start, so that, they can say, if the technology does A, B, C, D, then, we'll be very happy to, and we'll take the next step to either do supplemental activities if something comes up, or, you know, we'll go straight into wider deployment activities. So they vary. So, for instance, in the case of this Texas software predicts, situations on the grid, the goal was to match or to exceed 95% match. In other words, the predictability of the software from the smart meters would be that high. And in that case, the software worked and met that standard. In the case of another technology, it's a storage technology that is probably suitable for homes. We tested a prototype from a company and wanted to make sure that voltage and amperage and storage life was as advertised by the vendor. So we actually tested that at, on a bench at a Dolan Technology Center outside of Columbus. In the case of the plug load management, we wanted to see how much it would be able to save us money and energy, and it was better than other possible platforms on that benchmarking, then we'd become very interested in it. And so, the technology showed that we could exceed the standard there by quite a bit.
Great.
So it varies, from technology to technology.
Makes sense. You touched upon this a little bit, and I want to be respectful of your time. We'd scheduled a half an hour, but I think at the beginning of our call, you mentioned that if needed, we could go a little bit longer. So is that still
okay,
all right?
Okay, yes. Absolutely. I'm okay. Go ahead.
Much appreciated. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you touched upon this. You talked about like a sort of the culture change that's accompanied how you've gone about implementing these various innovation projects, bringing together, your generating and distribution line staff or delegating folks for specific roles on some of these projects. What did you learn about your team, the market actors or partners or about your customers through these projects last year and this year? And, if you could talk about anything that surprised you through this process, if there was anything, that would be great.
Sure. On the cultural side, one of the things that we implemented was a multi-department core team, as we call it. Had a lawyer, two procurement people, and a project management guy out of generation. And one of the things that we all agreed on when we came together was that we would never say no to a startup at the outset, that we would always say, well, we'll try to work with you. That's how we're able to get so much done so quickly, thinking about, the landmines that typically kill projects or, kill opportunities. Nick Akins felt this was pretty important to share with the industry, so Public Utilities Fortnightly just recognized this as the Innovation Culture Award for 2019. You can go on the PUF website, fortnightly.com, and there's a page there of different innovators, they call them, for culture, AEP was recognized. So it's pretty unique, it was an improvement over the old way of doing things. In terms of our customers, We actually consider our startups to be customers in a way, and they're giving us excellent feedback on how we're doing. I thought that maybe because these startups have choices, they can work with anybody they want. They said, no, we thought maybe we couldn't talk to AEP, but, we were surprised that we could, just because of perceptions, right? We haven't actually been that public with the actual projects, although, you know, there's a list of them. We haven't divulged details yet because we're just now coming to the end and we're, you know, writing up the reports and things like that. So we're going to be able to see what our customers think about, you know, our progress and that sort of thing. Nick has been talking about it a lot in our corporate responsibility report work, for instance. But we're just a little bit early in being able to share this more publicly.
You know, you mentioned this in terms of sharing and recognizes that it's important to sort of information share with others who might be undertaking efforts of their own. What are three most important things you think other utilities should know or do before they engage in projects like this?
Well, you know, the first thing is that you got to know what you're looking for. You know, utilities, sometimes it's hard to know in a focused way, you know, what's most important in terms of these innovative technologies and what the time horizon is that you're looking for. In my company, you know, Nick has publicized everybody doing innovation, he likes to highlight, you know, these future kinds of looks, and certainly because the startups are quite different. So it's really important, I think, if you're, you know, going to be going down a path and try to find advanced technologies that you got to know what you're looking for. And the time horizon is very important as well. It makes a huge difference, you know, if you can already buy it off the street just about, or you got to spend some time and effort, you know, doing it this way. You know, I also say that companies should know and regulators should know that there's a way to innovate that doesn't cost millions of dollars. I think there's a perception out there that, you know, these incubators, Gates, for instance, you know, pumps a million or two into something. We don't feel we have to do that with the process that we've come up with. Yeah, you got to spend some money, but it's very targeted. It's very efficient to find out if the service or product is there. You know, that certainly is important as well. So, you know, I think that helping the regulators know what you're doing and how you're doing it is important. In the state of Michigan, we've been involved with workshops on how to pilot, and we've been asked to come up and explain our approach. You know, that's very progressive, actually, because there's legacy guidance from legislators to commissions on what they should be focusing on and how they should make decisions that are based on big centralized generating stations being developed back in the 70s. And that's how we, you know, how they come up with least cost tests, for instance. Today, obviously, we're not doing that. If you look on AEP's
plans for the future, we're not going to be putting new coal in, not big central fossil. It's going to be all about big wind and small wind and some of these distributed generation sources inside the distribution space. The idea is that you got to go in currently with an expectation that you've got an interested set of policymakers at the state level with authority to make decisions, but they just don't know about these technologies. Heck, I mean, we didn't know that some of these technologies existed because we couldn't see everything that was going on in the world. Now we can see at least 1,000 applicants and startups and what they're doing and the trends that, you know, we're seeing. From their work, but we've got to be able to communicate, the new world of startups and how these results are coming out, so the policymakers can change the way they make decisions, so these new technologies get out to our customers much faster.
Great. This is great information. I'm trying to keep up as I rapidly type. I did go on your website where the AEP site describes modernizing distribution and, how you enable the resilient grid, some statistics on outages lasting, barely 100 seconds, and otherwise typically they would have been 83 minutes. This is from an April 2018, and then goals for this DACR, the Distribution Automation Circuit Reconfiguration,
yes.
Reducing SAIFI by nearly 16%. So, anything you'd like to say about how AEP is reacting to or leading on enabling the resilient grid?
Well, if you were asking that question to Nick Akins, he'd probably say, we're trying something new. We're, our customers want, they want electricity certain ways, at certain price points. Reliability attributes like that, but they want more too, and so we want to be their go-to kind of company. So if we can, further improve on outages, we want to do that. If they are interested in making sure that if there is a catastrophe that we can get them back faster. Because, we've shown them a new technology, the storage device, for instance, that, they could put a couple of critical pieces of communication devices on, that kind of stuff, that, we're good to do that. We need the regulators, though, to help us out. And so, Nick, if you went further on our website, you'd see that he convened what was called the Illumination Summit in Columbus last May, and he invited regulators and legislators from, our service territory, along with some technology providers, so there could be a pretty deep discussion about, what's the future looking like. There's a slide in the deck that you all use a lot, I'm sure, just like we do, the 3Ds that are coming. Nick is pretty serious about doing that, because if we don't do it, in the changing world of who provides electricity to which customers, AEP is not going to be able to provide what we believe is high quality service, and take care of our customers the way we'd like.
So sorry, I didn't want to interrupt, and I'm typing rapidly here, so I was on mute. That's great. You know, it is 50 past the hour. There were two other trends, and we did talk through our other questions a little bit on those, but like you just did on how you're leading and the actions you're taking with respect to enabling the resilient grid. Anything you'd like to add on AEP's leadership position or reaction to electrification trends or integrating high penetration of renewables?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, the starting point for us is, and we've said this very publicly, Nick has said this repeatedly. He says, you know, we need to be closer to the customer. Now, he speaks about residential customers, but I think, you know, in more broad terms, it's, you know, commercial and industrial ones as well. At one level, people would think, well, shoot, I mean, you know, he's just saying we'll give that customer whatever AP thinks. But what he's really saying is, number one, we're going to listen to what the customer wants, and then we're going to deliver that, okay? And we're going to be working ahead of the time when the customer actually needs it. So we're looking into the future. We're gonna use the distribution grid primarily because it gets us physically closer to the customer. And why do I say it? Well, because if you take a look at our big transmission grid and central fossil fuel or even wind farms, those are not close to customers generally.
Mm-hmm.
They're far away, but the distribution grid is in neighborhoods. So Nick's strategy is to help customers, you know, see us every day and know that, you know, we're there and, you know, we're trying to think ahead of the time when they actually need, you know, the new technology. There's no question that you know, renewables is what our customers want. They actually, for the most part, you know, want to see us continue our glide path to reduced carbon emissions. And we published a vision on how we're doing that with all these different technologies. And in order to do that, of course, to meet their other needs, like they want super reliability, we're working on storage solutions that are economical. Small example we didn't touch on is that we think we found a technology that uses retired electric vehicle battery packs and repurpose those. There'll be a lot of them out there. And so those could be very valuable to help renewables perform just as Central Station was performing. So we're expecting renewables, big scale, small scale, to be much more part of our future. And these non-wires alternatives to help the grid accommodate those is our approach. In electric vehicles, our cities are not that large that we serve in the regulated 11 states. And so we expect that we'll have some early adopters. My family has an electric vehicle, for instance. But for the most part, we'll be behind bigger cities like Chicago and New York and Los Angeles. That doesn't stop us from getting ready now being part of, activities that, you know, are certainly important today. As you might have seen, we helped the city of Columbus, get a pretty big award as a smart city with DOT and DOE grants to put a lot of electric chargers out and that sort of thing. But we're looking way beyond that, as I mentioned, in some of these other things where you have a lot of these EVs, and we've got to not only make sure that, that the grid can perform like people want, but that, you know, we can actually do other beneficial things, you know, with electric vehicles as well.
Great. You know, we had these three trends, and I think we have some very good information from you. Is there anything else that we have not discussed that you think should be considered or added to this report?
Well, let me just look through the deck here. Richie, I mean, you know, you and I have been talking
about
a lot
here.
Is there something that maybe there's a small gap that, you know, we haven't talked about?
Maybe a point of just clarification. This is probably just a few-word answer from you just to wrap up here. But, you know, what I'm hearing from different utilities here as we talk through them is that there's different approaches to this, but there's kind of some overlapping themes. And so in some cases, it's been good or it's been a learning experience for some utilities to kind of make this humongous, big, gargantua plan that brings everybody in and takes year or some time, you know, to get through. But it's a big project and it's a new way of kind of being transparent and bringing in multiple stakeholders. In this case, the same trends are kind of focused on where you got to bring everybody in, but this isn't about doing this big, humongous, broad thing. This is about being nimble and being quick and being efficient and being open from a regulatory standpoint to change how you look at things because we're faster now. So, you know, I think if I'm trying to get this right, and I'm not trying to get to a conclusion yet, but, you know, I'm hearing that there's many ways all over the country to get this these improvements across that are needed. But what you guys are realizing is that let's do this in small chunks, let's get it right, but let's do it quickly. And that's the message to regulators is it's the same thing. We need to be all together on this. There has to be transparency. We're letting you in. Come with us. We want to move quick. Is that the message if we were to say it to regulators, you know, on your behalf?
Yeah.
Is that kind of, am I getting that right?
I think you almost have it. I mean, we have gone small, okay,
right.
But fast and efficient to find results. That then we can go to a regulator and say, you know, there's a regulatory compact here where, you know, we need to work together. And now we have some concrete results, and there'll be more coming every year now. Okay. You know, we'll see 1,000 applicants, 1,000 different startups. So we really, the time is now to work together so we can get these deployed. Yeah. So the transparency is good, but we never felt, or we're certainly not portraying ourselves as, you know, we're better than everybody. What we're trying to do is to say we're finding these technologies and proving them out quickly, and we didn't even know they existed, and you probably didn't either, but we're sharing. And then we need to work together on getting them out to the customers.
That's very helpful clarification. That's great. I think we've caught a lot. Have any other questions here? I think this has been, you know, fantastic, and I appreciate, you know, your time and your wife's time for driving over there, for letting you talk her ear off for an hour as well. But yeah, I think, you know, this has been wonderful, Gomathi. I don't have anything else to add.
Yeah, echo that. This is great. You know, we are talking under the umbrella of this research, but you know, I want to be in the room when you're, you know, looking at those results from all of these innovative technology providers, it sounds like a great environment. And, yeah, congratulations on all of your projects. This is very interesting to hear about. Thank you so much for your time.
We're delighted to share. And, you know, we know we can get even better. And it's pretty exciting for us. I'll just leave you with this. Thanks for inviting me to share some of this information. The deck is public if you need that to be public, and the video is also public if you want to use that in an illustrative way or however you want to think about it. Okay.
Great. Thank you very much, Paul. Have a wonderful weekend and great holiday.
Yep, you all too, and thanks again.
Take care.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.